this man, Evans, we met. We were both held hostage in the same RV going across the state of Florida about 4, 5, 6 years ago on a speaking tour, and we became fast friends. He is prominently featured in the in Curtis Bauer's videos, Agenda and Agenda 2. He is as foremost an authority on Marxism and the Marxist strategy as anyone that I know in the United States. So please join me in giving a warm welcome to our friend Trevor Loudon.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Paul, and thanks to everybody tonight for coming along. I recognize some familiar faces here, and it's great to see them. It's been a little while since I've been in Oklahoma. Just want to start with a story. Any refugees from California here tonight? A few, couple, okay. Well, you might understand this. I was in California, Los Angeles. I love street food. I walked up to a vendor, got some food. He gave me the change. And he said, you have an accent. Where are you from? I said, I'm from New Zealand. He said, well, where's that? So to make it really, really easy for him, I said, look, it's down near Australia. He said, ah, where Arnold Schwarzenegger comes from. Look. People ask me all the time, you know, why do I care about the United States? And I've probably been all over your beautiful country now. And I say there are two reasons. The first is gratitude. You know, my country was facing invasion during World War II by the Imperial Japanese Army. And if it hadn't been for the huge sacrifice of your fathers and uncles and grandfathers at the battles of Guadalcanal and the Coral Sea and Midway, we would have been done, folks. And that's a very strong memory even today. The second reason is related, but it's a little more selfish. Ronald Reagan had it right. This is the last best hope for mankind. You know, if you should ever lose your constitution or your liberty or your economic dynamism or your military superiority, all of which took a huge trashing through the Obama years, you'd soon be living in a world run out of Moscow and Beijing and Havana and Tehran. And is that the kind of world you'd like to leave to your kids, folks? So look, anybody who cares about freedom has to care about America. Now tonight, I want to talk about infiltration, both of your government and your churches, because you have been given a system to run your lives. It is civil government, the family, and the church. Those are the three pillars that keep your society stable, and all of them are under attack right now. All of them. Now, has anybody in the room ever had to undergo an FBI background check for any form of government job? Before I do that, I just want to say a couple of things about the 2016 election. I'll get back to you, ma'am. About the 2016 election. First, does anybody think there may have been a touch of the miraculous about that election? Okay. Yeah. I think even our atheist friends would have to acknowledge that one, right? Well, but that election, it didn't save America. It gave us a reprieve, a second chance. And there's a lot of times in the Old Testament where the Israelites got a second chance. But if they didn't use that, did they ever get a third chance? Well, we're in a second chance, folks. We better use it. Second thing I'll say, which is a little more cynical, the Germans have a wonderful phrase. It's Schadenfreude. It means to take pleasure in the pain of others. And it's not a very noble thing. It's not something you boast about. But on election night 2016, if you stayed up all night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, they panned the Democratic Party headquarters in New York, remember? And when you saw those little snowflakes bawling their eyes out and hugging each other, did you feel a little bit of Schadenfreude, people? Okay? Maybe a lot. Well, after 8 years of Obama trashing your country, I think you maybe you deserved a little bit, don't you? And I think you're gonna looking forward to it again on November the 3rd, right? Absolutely. Now, I'll get back to the question before. Anybody in this room ever undergone an FBI background check for government service or a private sector job? You're talking nearly a quarter of the room, okay? Now, is it true, people, that those are very rigorous? They'll go through your family background, overseas travel, criminal convictions, all of that kind of stuff, because they want to know that you can be trusted to protect the Constitution. You know that thing, all enemies, foreign and domestic? They need to be able to trust you. You know, one traitor can cost you a battle or a war or your liberty. Imagine had Benedict Arnold been successful when he tried to betray the revolution during your Revolutionary War. How different your history might have been. But what if you're a young Marxist radical who hangs around with the local Communist Party and the local Democratic Party, which are all work pretty much together now, and they get you elected to Congress, where you may serve on the Homeland Security Committee or the Armed Services Committee or the Intelligence Committee? How much of an FBI background check do you need for that one, folks? Zero. Because the people are supposed to vet the candidates, right? And the media is supposed to help you do it, right? Well, do you think the Iranians or the Cubans or the Chinese know there are no background checks on your congressman? Do you think maybe they might even try and use it against you? Surely not. People, but you don't worry, you know, because there's no way bad guys can get into your government because you have an organization to stop them. It's called the FBI. Okay? You saw how tough they were on Hillary Clinton, right? They didn't give her any mercy, did they? They put your national security ahead of their jobs and pensions, right? No, they didn't. They should have, but they didn't. Well, the FBI and the Justice Department are both controlled or overseen by the Judiciary Committee, the most powerful committee in your Congress. And for about 40 years, that was led by a man called John Conyers from Michigan. Remember him, anybody? He was in Congress, I think, 140, 160 years in total. No? There a long time. But he was the top man. He was the man who abolished your House Un-American Activities Committee, your last line of defense. He had a 50-year history with the Communist Party USA, 40 years with Democratic Socialists of America, a big-time Muslim Brotherhood supporter. Yet he oversaw the FBI and the Justice Department. Now, on that committee, well, until very recently, was a woman called Judy Chu from California, a big-time supporter of the Communist Workers' Party, a pro-Chinese communist outfit. And you should see Judy Chu. Look her up on C-SPAN when the FBI arrests one of the more than 25,000 Chinese spies working in your country. She gets on their case. You are racist, she says. You're a racist organization. You're only persecuting these people because you hate Asians. And she has arranged for sensitivity training for these cruel FBI agents so they don't persecute these poor Chinese spies any longer. Now, Sean Hannity's been a bit upset lately because you've got a socialist in Congress now, Ocasio-Cortez. How could this happen? She's a member of Democratic Socialists of America, which is worse than the Communist Party, by the way. Well, the head of the Judiciary Committee today is a man called Jerry Nadler, okay? The man who tried to impeach your president. Well, Jerry Nadler joined Democratic Socialists of America at least as far back as 1977. He is a Marxist, folks. Yet he oversees the FBI and the Judiciary Committee. So, You know, right now the FBI is out there trying to track down Black Lives Matter rioters and communist radicals. These are Jerry Nadler's friends that the FBI is supposed to be going after. Do you think they are really keen to arrest their boss's friends? Might sort of inhibit them a bit, right? So the FBI, which has never gone after Congress members for political crimes, they'll go after them for bribery and corruption, but not espionage, subversion, treason, and all those other things. They decide, look, there's a whole bunch of congressmen taking money from Iran. There's a whole bunch working with the Cubans. There's a whole bunch working with the Communist Party. There's a whole bunch working with, the Venezuelans and the Cubans. We better start investigating these people because they're destroying this country. And they're in charge of the Homeland Security Committee. They're in charge of the Intelligence Committee. We better start doing something. So they go to the Judiciary Committee. Mr. Nadler, Mrs. Chu, we need your permission, we need your approval to investigate about 100 of your Democratic colleagues. Is that okay? And by the way, Mr. Nadler, Mrs. Chu, you're both on the list. Is that all right? Can you see the problem? There's no media scrutiny on these communists. There's no background checks. And the FBI doesn't dare touch them. That is why you have this so-called deep state in there. That is why you have Obamacare pushed down your throat, immigration amnesty, nuclear deal with Iran, Green New Deal. All of it is communist, folks. All of it. The Green New Deal is not about the environment. It's about destroying your military budget so Russia and China can run the world. That's what it's about. And now you've got a Chinese-driven COVID, which is completely controlled and driven by the Communist Chinese Party, Chinese Communist Party, with the express purpose of destroying your president, wrecking the economy to destroy your president, and destroying your military budget so you cannot oppose China and their Russian friends. This is a survival issue, folks. This is not a public health issue. Every time you stand against this, people, you're standing for the defense of your country because this is military. And then when we're recovering from that, we get a whole bunch of rioters from Black Lives Matter. Well, it may surprise you to know that these riots are run by two groups, Freedom Road Socialist Organization and Liberation Road, and they're both pro-Chinese communist parties. And Black Lives Matter, which is the front group for Liberation Road, is a pro-Chinese Maoist communist organization, 100%. And they're out there right now burning your cities at the behest of their Chinese masters, and no one's calling them out. Don't you think the Chinese want President Trump not to get elected, folks? He's done more to hurt them than any other president. They know if they don't beat Trump, the Chinese Communist Party is going to collapse. And the leaders of that country are going to be hung from lampposts. It's us or them. So infiltration. Well, the Marxists have pretty much got full control of the Democratic Party, Hollywood, most of your colleges, your media, your unions. But there's one institution that's safe, right? And that's the churches. They'd never go into the churches, right? People, the churches of America were the very first target for the communists. You know, you started this country a long time ago on this crazy idea, this wacko idea that your rights come from God and they come to the people. Because for many thousands of years before that, God spoke to the king and the king told you what to do. And it just happened to be that God was always in agreement with the king. Okay? Whatever the king said just happened to be what God wanted. You know, we want your sons for the army. Done. We want half your crops to feed our soldiers. Done. We want your daughters to serve in our court. Done. God wants it. You don't like that? Well, you're disobeying God, people, and you'll be punished. So for the first time in world history, you had a system where the rights came from God straight to you, and you elected a government to say, to preserve those rights and keep you free. And that offended every dictator on the planet, folks. Because they thought if that idea starts spreading, we're done. We're over. So they've been trying to bring down your republic from the day it was founded. Now, that really expanded big time in this, the 20th century, because that's when Marx, a Satanist, basically created a system, basically put a scientific veneer on rebellion. And this idea spread right through Europe, and they actually had a revolution in Russia in 1917 to establish a base for communism. And it spread all over Europe from there like a cancer. Now, they knew that the United States of America was the number one impediment to world tyranny. Because you're Christian, you're constitutional, you're patriotic, and you love your liberty. You weren't an easy target, and you're well-armed both internally and nationally. So you weren't an easy target, people. So what if you wanted? What are you going to do if you want to take down a country like America? You want to weaken the backbone of America, do you not? And what is the backbone of America, folks? It's the church. So the very first communist front set up in the United States was the Methodist Committee for Social Action. It was run by a man called Harry Ward of Union Theological Seminary, a Communist Party member. They spread communism right through the Protestant churches. In the 1920s, they told American communists, if you grew up a Baptist, go back into the Baptist church. If you grew up a Catholic, go into the Catholic church. If you grew up a Mormon, go into the Mormon church. Not because you believed in it, because you could use your influence in the church to move the country towards socialism and communism. Because what has a church got that a communist would want? It's got lots of money and lots of influence. People will listen to a pastor when they speak socialism when they wouldn't listen to some lunatic standing on a street corner on a soapbox speaking the same stuff. Well, my pastor said it. It must be true. I should listen to my pastor. So they targeted the churches really early. And by the time the 1930s had rolled round, most of the mainstream churches in this country, the mainstream Protestant churches, were effectively the Communist Party at prayer. I had a very good friend, Herb Bromerstein. He was a communist who left communism and became a top investigator for the Senate Internal Security Committee. He was America's biggest expert on American communism. And I often talked to him about it. And he said, Trevor, do you know who the biggest suckers for communism were in this country? Who fell for it time and time again? Protestant clergymen. They were targeted big time. Now, the Catholics, they thought, they're okay. Don't worry about it. We know what's happening in the Protestant churches. The communists ain't coming near us. Because no communist is going to take a lifelong vow of celibacy to become a Catholic priest. Seriously, this is what they thought. You know, what commie is going to do that? Well, Ballard Dodd, who was a Catholic, who became a communist and reverted back to the faith, testified before your Congress that she had helped to put 1,100 young men into the Catholic priesthood in the 1930s. Now, why do you think they have a gay pedophilia problem in the Catholic Church today? Because maybe just because some of those young communists just happen to be homosexual. Because they wouldn't care about a lifelong vow of celibacy then, would they? So that is a double whammy for the Catholic Church. And when they liberalized the church, went all left-wing in the 1960s, that was about 30 years after they started infiltrating. And so those young priests of the 1930s were now bishops and cardinals. And then the KGB, who wanted to take over Latin America but was making no progress against the Catholic Church in Latin America, in 1957 they'd had a big conference in Venezuela, and that's where the KGB, the Soviet secret police, started what they call liberation theology. That is Catholicism, well, no, it's Marxism with a little bit of Catholicism on top. And that spread right through Latin America. And the same thing spread through the black churches in the United States. Just basically Marxism with a little bit of Christianity on top. But so you had this huge infiltration of the churches. Most of the Protestant churches hooked up with the World Council of Churches, which was run by the Soviet KGB. So the Soviet KGB would pass some edict down, and that would go to every church, affiliated church across America. It was Marxism on steroids, folks. Now, before we get into the modern era, I want to ask you, has anybody ever heard the phrase situation ethics? So what it means, in my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, in the old days, the ethical standard for most people in North America were the Ten Commandments. It didn't mean you obeyed them, but it meant you referenced them as what you should obey. That was your standard. Okay? And that was what we judged morality on for a long time. Well, in 1966, a man called Joseph Fletcher, regarded as the leading Protestant theologian of the 20th century in America, a Harvard Divinity School professor, I believe, he wrote a book called Situation Ethics. And the premise of this book was the Old Testament stuff, the Ten Commandments, that's outdated. That's harsh. Our new morality, the standard should be love. Whatever you do, your ethics should be a personal thing, not referenced in the Bible, but they should, every ethical decision you make should be done in the spirit of love. Now, theoretically, that might mean your kids are a bit hungry and you haven't got any money and you love your kids, so if I shoplift a bit of food from the supermarket, that's okay, because it's done in the spirit of love. Okay? So it opened up the whole ethical box of can of worms. And it came at the same time that Dr. Spock, the famous Marxist, wrote his books that told every American parent, don't discipline your kids, don't be tough on your kids, be their friend, be their buddy. At the same time, we had the Frankfurt School, the communists who came from Nazi Germany to America, got into Columbia University, make love, not war, drop out, you know, the sexual revolution of the 60s. It all came together at once. So you could justify almost anything you did by situation ethics. Yeah, I had to have that affair because my wife doesn't really love me and I loved her and, you know, it's okay. You know, has anybody heard any of these arguments? You know, every cowardly pastor who says, I'm not going to tell my flock the real truth because that might upset them. It might drive some people away. And I love my church. I don't want to break it up. So I'm going to soft soap it. I'm going to be nice and pleasant and not tell them the hard reality. That is situation ethics. It's not truth. It's situation ethics. Well, Joseph Fletcher, you may be shocked to discover, was the man who helped set up Planned Parenthood. He was also, after he wrote his book, he left the church, declared himself an atheist, and set up a group that advocated for post-birth abortion for retarded children up to 10 years old. It was also revealed that he'd been a secret Communist Party member and supporter for 40 years, folks. He was active in the World Peace Council, several communist fronts. He was named in House Un-American Activities hearings as a secret communist in Boston for many, many years. That man transformed the morals of the church and the morals of a nation. And he was a hardcore Marxist-Leninist communist pretending to be a Christian. Do you think he would have done the same had he not been a Christian? Could he have had the same influence? If he'd just been a secular writer, people would have ignored him. But he had the moral authority of the church. And he used it to destroy the morality of this country. One traitor can cost you a war, person, people. One subversive can cost you your whole moral system and bring your country into disaster. Now, today we have a situation. Has anybody heard of that in the churches today you have... Well, no, I just want to... Another point. See, a lot of churches today, you go into them, and the biggest word you'll ever hear is love. Love, 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 love. Right? Especially in the seeker-friendly churches. You go there, it's all about love. And this comes from Fletcher. This comes from situation ethics. You know, if you stand up, say you want to board a wall, you're a hater because you're not doing things in the spirit of love. Now, why? But the thing is, they've redefined love. Now, every parent knows that there are two kinds of love in a family. There's the love of the mother and the love of the father. Now, your mum, when you skin your knee, she'll pick you up, she'll put a bandage on it, she'll give you a cuddle, right? She'll teach you to bake pancakes. She'll hold your hand. She'll read your stories. And we got to have that. Every family needs that. But there's also the love of the father, who, if necessary, will boot your little backside if you disrespect your mother. Okay? Who will take you fishing. He will take you hunting. He will take you to play tennis or whatever. Who will teach you to be a man and to teach his daughter to be a lady. That is masculine love. And it's so essential. He'll take you fishing, he'll take you to the woodshed too if you need it. Okay? Do you tell me that that families are not better with both kinds of love? We all know this, don't we? We know the single parents who do a great job, but we know it'd always be easier if there's a dad in the house. And we know there's thousands of young aimless boys in our society, rotten in jail, dead in jobs, because they never had a dad to sort them out, to give them an example. And a lot of young women, too, go from relationship to relationship because they're looking for the father they never had. You need both kinds of love. Well, a church needs both kinds of love, people. You need to be welcomed and accepted, but sometimes you need to be chastised. Sometimes you need to be held accountable. Sometimes you need to be told some very tough truths. Because we are imperfect beings, and we do stray. And just like a kid needs to be smacked to make sure they don't put their finger in the light socket, you know, sometimes... us as adults need to be chastised and brought back into line too. You know, to me, a church sermon, there should be a little bit like a cold shower sometimes, folks. It should be a pretty bracing, and you should be thinking, I need to clean myself up a little bit. You know, you should be going to church not to feel good all the time, but to examine yourself and have some standards and look at yourself to see if you need to actually improve yourself a bit. But that's masculine love, folks. You know, Jesus didn't go into the temple and say to the money changers, hey guys, I don't really like what you're doing. Can we sort of negotiate something here? It's a little bit offensive to me. He went and he turned the tables over. You know, he didn't go, you know, he said, go forth and sin no more. He didn't say, do whatever you like and I'll make it right with Dad. So there is both sides of it, isn't there? But this whole church thing now, all the seeker-friendly churches, it's all love. And it's all feminine love. And that's only half of the truth, people. And so people are going to church for a spiritual awakening or experience, and they're only getting half of the deal. And that's a shame on the pastors, people, because they're not doing their job. You know, what is a pastor? A pastor is someone, as they say, a shepherd of a flock. Well, sometimes there's wolves out there, people. Right now, we got wolves across America burning our cities. And you've got churches all over America saying Black Lives Matter is so cool. I'm all aboard with anti-racism. I'm going to take some pizzas out to the local rioters because they must be getting hungry, burning all the buildings. But Sarah, this is what's happening. Thousands of churches around this country are all on board with this garbage. You want to end racism? Very simple. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. Do you need anything more than that? It's real simple. So that takes me to what critical race theory is. Now, Paul's talked about this because this is the guiding thing behind the subversion of your churches. Your churches are adopting Marxism. They're adopting, and it's mainly done through critical race theory. Now, in the old days, the communists would say that evil capitalists are oppressing the workers. They're ripping off the workers, and the workers need to rise up and take their wealth. That's the classic capital Marxist communist formula. Well, that doesn't work very well in America because you don't have a rigid class structure like they have in Europe. You can start out dirt poor and end up very, very rich. You can start out very, very rich and end up dirt poor too. It all depends on you, doesn't it? But race is always with you. Watch, the race you're born in is the race you live with. So if you want to divide people in America and you want to break the society down and cause a general disintegration to cause a revolution, would you go the class route or the race route? Simple, isn't it? So critical race theory means this. It means you can only be a racist if you're white, because racism is about power, and only white Christian capitalists have power. The oppressed minorities, the people of color, can never be racist because they don't have power. So therefore, this is the Black Lives Matter mantra. Therefore, to end racism, you have to end white Christian capitalist patriarchy. That is what this is all about, people. It's not about ending racism. It's about ending America. If they were serious about ending racism, they'd be in Chicago trying to calm down the gangbangers who kill about 100 people every weekend. Just about all black. But they're not. They're using race to divide your country to create something new from its ashes. And they mean from its ashes, people. They intend to burn this nation to the ground if they can. And you have churches supporting this stuff. Because what happens, see, the thing about it logically, if you're a leftist, you want complete control of this country. Because you've got Hollywood, you've got the media, you've got the unions, you've got the Democratic Party, that's all under your belt. But every now and then, these crazy evangelical Christians, they get up and they go and do something stupid like voting for Donald Trump or Ronald Reagan. And this is just spoiling the whole agenda, folks. You know, we've almost got the country under control, and these crazy Christians go out and elect Ronald Reagan, and we're back 30 years. And we're just getting back on top of it again, and we've got Hillary just about ready to take the country down, and it's all good. And these crazy evangelicals elect Donald Trump. Can you believe it? So do you think they're going to allow that to keep happening? So they made the left made a very, very deliberate decision in the last 15 years to infiltrate the evangelical and Baptist churches, because they tend to be politically conservative and biblically faithful. And both are offensive to the left. So there were groups set up. This came out of a lot of it came out of Jim Wallace, who was Obama's faith advisor. And he set up a group called Sojourners. And that overlapped with the Democratic Socialists of America Religious Commission, the Communist Party USA Religious Commission. All these communist groups have religious commissions to infiltrate their people into your churches. And they've got them in seminaries all over the country. Many of them are very prominent Christians. Very prominent. You know, they had the Bishop of Alaska was a Marxist for a while. But there's many, many examples. So they did this, and one of the main culprits has been a group called the Gospel Coalition, led by a man called Tim Keller. I'm sure many of you have heard of him. You've probably read his books. You know, a lot of Christians admire the man immensely. But read through his sermons, people. He's talking Marxism all the time. A friend of mine went through 10 years of his sermons, found more than 150 quotes from Marx and Marxist philosophers in his works. So the Gospel Coalition has spread this critical race theory and all this kind of stuff all through your churches, social justice, global warming, refugee resettlement, all this stuff is now going through your seminaries and your churches all over the country. And it's also gone into the Southern Baptists through J.D. Greer and Russell Moore and these types of people. They are like the Southern Baptists passed critical race theory as part of the church toolbox and for dealing with racism at their recent convention in Alabama. Critical race theory, as I said, if you're white, you must be a racist. The only way to end racism is to end white Christian capitalism. And that was invented by a man called James Cone, a black theologian active with Democratic Socialists of America, wrote a book, The Black Church and Marxism, What Do They Have to Offer Each Other? Went to Cuba in 1982 to meet with Soviet officials, Cuban communist officials, and Fidel Castro. And the man he took with him, some of you may have heard of him, a man called Jeremiah Wright, Obama's pastor. So you've got a major infiltration now of the Southern Baptists and many of the large evangelical churches. I'll give you a couple of examples how this works. Now, in 2015, there was an evangelical convention for teenagers in St. Louis, Missouri. And because it was the Midwest, most of these kids are white, right? And their guest speaker was a woman called Michelle Higgins, a young black pastor from St. Louis. And she got up and told all these young white evangelicals the thing that God wanted them to do more than anything else is to end white privilege. These kids might be on food stamps, folks, but they've got white privilege just by the fact that they're white. And so they're all fired up. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to go on that mission trip to Africa now or South America. I'm going to get out there and end white privilege. This is apparently the 11th commandment. Well, we're not told that Michelle Higgins was a member of the Organization of Black Struggle, a front for Liberation Road, the pro-Chinese Communist Party that started the Ferguson riots and runs Black Lives Matter. So these young evangelicals were being taught straight pro-Chinese communist Marxism, thinking it's Christianity. This is happening all over. I'll give you another example. There's a church in North Carolina, a friend of mine's friend attended it. And they got a new pastor, all out of Southeastern Baptist, all fired up with critical race theory. And there's two families in the church, one black and one white, and they both have the same surname. So obviously, the white family must have once enslaved the black family. So he demanded that the white family apologize to the black family for their sin of slavery. Well, the white family said, well, no, we've never enslaved anybody, neither has our family. And even if they did, we're Christian and we believe in personal responsibility, not the sins of someone else. Take a hike. Well, the pastor persisted and that church no longer exists. And this is the kind of argument. See, what the left are trying to do is neutralize the churches, and if they can, move them from the Republican Party to the Democrat Party. They don't care about their souls. They just want their votes to go in the right direction. And so one of the arguments they're now using, this comes straight out of the Gospel Coalition. Christians, you don't like abortion, right? You're not going to vote Democrat because they believe in abortion big time. But don't get hung up on that. You can still vote Democrat because this, even though they support abortion, if they're elected, they will give a lot more money to poor people. They will do a lot more wealth redistribution, and that will alleviate the need for abortion. So by actually voting Democrat, you can lower abortion. This is an argument coming straight out of the Gospel Coalition, people, to move people away from conservative politics to voting for the left. And if that happens, you can forget any more conservative governments in your country. You know, Andrew Breitbart used to say, he would say, politics is downstream from culture. The culture shapes the politics. But he should have said, culture is downstream from religion, so the religion shapes the culture shapes the politics. And if you look at your politics and they're a little bit astray and your culture's adrift, what does that tell you about your religion? Not here, but most of America. One more little point. 1955, President Johnson, when he was a senator, he said he introduced the Johnson Amendment, and that told every church in the country you cannot endorse candidates or you'll lose your political, your non-profit status. And every cowardly pastor in the country said, hallelujah, I don't have to talk about the controversial stuff anymore. I've got a ready excuse. Can't talk about abortion, lose my status. Can't talk about gay marriage, lose my status. Can't talk about taxes, lose my status. They had a ready-made excuse to shut their mouths. And a few years after that, they took prayer out of schools. And a few years after that, they passed Roe v. Wade. Do you think they could have done either of those things had they not neutralized the churches first? It was a program to get the pesky Christians out of the civic affairs of the nation, folks. And when Donald Trump recently was at a big conference of pastors, he said, guys, I'm going to remove the Johnson Amendment. And I think he expected them all to go, yay! And he got a stony silence. Ugh, please don't. I've got a massive church. I've got a big mortgage. I don't want to talk about these issues because half my people are going to walk the next day and I'm broke. 80% of the pastors in this country are very happy with how things are. Because they got to get out of jail card free. So that's where the churches are. Your churches now, your seminaries are now where your universities were 10 years ago. Most universities now are Marxist. Have you heard about this? You know, 80% of young Christian kids who go to college now lose their faith in the first year. Well, that's happening now in the seminaries too. So what's that going to do to your church in the next 10 years, folks? All these new pastors coming out. So we're doing a movie, Enemies Within the Church. And we're going to target these issues. We're going to expose these issues. Because most Christians are not going along with this kind of stuff because they agree with it. But they're not hearing anything else. They don't understand. You know, a young person decides to go to church. So they go down the road to the nearest church. They learn all about social justice, all about critical race theory, all about refugee resettlement. They never hear the word sin or hell or redemption or any of that old-fashioned stuff, but they think that is Christianity. Why wouldn't they? Why would they know any better? So you're getting a whole, you know, people say the church is growing, but what kind of church is growing? You got to look at the quality of what's being produced, folks. You know, back before World War II, they had lots of churches in Germany, but they all had swastikas in them because they made a deal with Hitler. What would you call that, genuine Christianity? So that's where we're at, people. And there is a remnant. Churches like yours and many others around the country are standing up to this kind of stuff. But people need to draw a line in the sand, folks. It's no sense listening to a meeting like this on a Thursday night, is it, Paul? Friday night, then going to a communist church on a Sunday. You know, there's no point. If your church is really a social club or a left-wing gathering, you really think that's going to get you to heaven, folks? You really think it's worth going to just because you like the pastor and they got a great coffee shop? You know, you got to be learning something, don't you? You come to church for truth, do you not? Shouldn't that be the primary reason you're here? So we need to draw a line in the sand. You know, which side are we on? What do we believe in? What are we willing to stand for? You know, being a Christian for the first 1,000 years of Christianity was just about a death sentence. You know, people risked their lives all the time, routinely, for their faith. Now I think a lot of Christians think that that persecution means they have to go down from 3 cars to 2. You know, they don't understand that most of the world is experiencing major Christian persecution right now. Africa, India, all over the world, China, there is a big turn against Christianity, and it's coming here. You know, the Democrats passed in the last election 2 years ago through the House the Equality Act. What does that mean? It means that LGBTQ rights trump your religious liberties. It means that a gay couple, I say homosexual couple, could come to Pastor Blair and say, look, we really love each other and we want to get married in your church. And Pastor Blair says, well, look, I'm sorry, that does not accord with my view, my biblical view. I think that's immoral. You'll need to go somewhere else. And the next week, you get slapped with a $5 million lawsuit from the Department of Justice for discrimination. That's what that means, folks. And do you not think they would do that? You have seen the hatred coming out of the Democratic Party for Christianity. They haven't been praying much at their conferences lately, have they? You know, not to God, anyway. So we got to understand the next election is critical. That's a big battle in the war, and we got to win it. But it doesn't end there. It doesn't remotely end there. And we got to be examining ourselves. What do we believe in? What are we willing to stand for? Am I just going to give up the fight now? Because if you are, you really should do it now. Or am I going to steel myself and get ready to fight for what I believe in? I don't mean guns. I mean moral courage, making a stand, publicly stating your views, you know, abiding by truth, being a better person yourself, all of it. Are you ready? Because we are going into tumultuous times, people. What we've seen in the last year is just a warm-up. They really are trying to destroy this country. Really are trying to destroy this, what you believe in. So you are so blessed and lucky to belong to a church like this that gives you the fellowship and the courage and the principle to make a stand. You know, there are not many churches like this, folks. And you should value it and be prepared to stand by it. You know, because you've got to think about what kind of world you want to leave to your children, folks. What kind of world do you want to leave to your grandchildren? And your revolutionary founders, remember your fathers, you know? I'm just going to go on a couple more minutes, Paul, because I think this is important. Your country was founded not because your forefathers objected to a tax on their tea. You know, I'm sure that annoyed them, but that wasn't the big deal. It was because there were 13 colonies in America, all run by a different denomination, like Maryland was Catholic, Pennsylvania was Quaker, and they'd all come from Europe, because in every country in Europe they had a state religion. You remember, God talks to the government, talks to the king, tells you what to do. Well, every country in Europe was run like that. And they did not like it, so they fled across the ocean to America so they could practice their faith freely. And when they saw King George break the covenant, the freedom covenants they had in the colonies to have their own religious liberty and start coming after them, they knew they were all going to be brought under the control of the Church of England. The religious liberty that they had fled across the ocean to gain was about to be lost. That is why they fought, people. That is the primary reason they picked up guns. And by the way, people, they picked up squirrel rifles to go up against the world's greatest military empire. Were they insane or what? They were insane because they believed in this crazy radical idea that their rights came from God, and that God would want them to guard those rights. And sometimes they would have to be paid for in blood. And many times they were. But look what they gave you, people. Look at the amazing country they gave you. The country that has more wealth and more prosperity than any other nation ever has. The greatest amount of freedom, that has built more churches around the world than any other, more hospitals, more schools, has saved more countries from tyranny than any other. All of the great things America has been able to do is because your ancestors respected their religious liberty so much they were willing to fight for them. And look what they gave you. Well, people, do you not owe it to your grandchildren and children to preserve what you have been given and to hand it on to them? Amen. So people, please examine yourself. Look at what you're willing to do to save this country and save what you believe in, because you will be tested in the next months and years, folks. And maybe it'll be a good idea to get yourself sorted out now, what you really believe and what you're willing to do and what you're willing to fight for. Because it's better to sort it out now before the test gets really intense than to try and sort it out in the middle of a battle, in the middle of a fight for your country. This is the time, people. So I want to thank Pastor Paul so much for inviting me here tonight. I want to thank Pastor Dan for the incredibly inspiring speech he gave on the Black Robe Regiments the other day. Amen. It truly brought tears to my eyes on many occasions. You got a great gift here, people. Really, really have. And I want to thank all of you for living your beliefs and standing up for your beliefs and having fellowship with people who share them. That's a great gift, and I'm very proud to be amongst you and grateful to be invited to speak to you. So thank you very much.
Folks, if you can, we've got enough time to take about 10 minutes of questions, and then we'll wrap up and you'll have time to peruse the books and get out to a little bit of a later dinner. So everybody's got a question right here.
Trevor, thank you so much. What you're talking about, infiltration, is incrementalism. It's been happening, oh gosh, so long. How do we fight that incrementalism? Because they take a little at a time. It's the frog in the hot water pot, and they're just slowly turning up the heat.
Well, the first thing is you've got to draw a line in the sand, because you give up no more space. You know, they've been taking little bits of our freedom, twisting our education system, twisting the churches for a long, long, long time. The first thing is make a line in the sand now. No more. This goes no further. You resist every further attempt to take. Then you start to look at where you can start to take things back, whether it's your local council, whether it's in your church that you attend. Talk to your pastor if he's buying into this garbage. Do you understand what this critical race theory is? Talk to him. And if he can be changed, walk with him and try and get the church back. If he can't be changed, you've got to find a different church.
Amen.
Or start one of your own.
That's right.
As I said before, why go to a meeting like this on a Friday and go to a communist church on a Sunday?
Right.
So, but, yeah, look, this has got to be exposed. Look, we used to have a government that was seriously interested in exposing bad guys. This is an idea I put out there, and it could be applied in a lot of ways. I think President Trump should declare an amnesty, not on illegal immigrants. I think he should say 3 months. Every foreign agent, every spy, every traitor in this country, everybody working with foreign governments has got 3 months to come forward and spill their guts. Expose their networks. And if you tell us everything you know and turn in all the other spies, you can go and live the rest of your life in liberty. You won't have a job. You won't have a high-level job. But if you don't, at the end of 3 months, we're coming after you. We're going to put you in jail for the rest of your life, whatever it takes. You've got a chance. That would throw the Chinese into utter confusion. The Iranians would go crazy because they wouldn't know who's turning and who wasn't. You know, they wouldn't know when they went to have that secret meeting with this congressman that maybe the congressman had contacted the FBI and was spilling their guts, you know. So we've got to basically give the infiltrators a chance. We go to them and say, look, Russell Moore, we know what you're doing. Are you going to come clean, or do we have to go after you and get you out of office, go for you, remove you from positions of power, and publicly shame you? What's it going to be, Russell?
Yeah.
What's it going to be, Tim? But we have to put a line in the sand first and start pushing back. Pushing back. You know, I got this vision of a world. See, the whole battle is not Republican, Democrat, whatever. It's basically Christianity and the Constitution versus communism and the devil. That's what it is. And you've got to decide which side you're on. I envisage a world not of elitists and globalists, but a world where Oklahomans run Oklahoma.
Amen.
Where Americans run America. Where Belgians run Belgium. Where South Africans run South Africa. Where Latvians run Latvia. Isn't that a crazy, whacked out idea, people? But if we can get this country back and restore the Constitution, we're going to spark that kind of movement all over the world. We're going to spark an economic boom and a liberty boom, and I believe a spiritual revival. But we've got to make a line in the sand and start pushing back. No more retreat, ever.
We have a question here.
Mine has to do with the... Oh, real close. Okay. We know the virus came from China.
Yeah.
And we've all had experiences with negative things about that. And now they say in 2 months there's going to be a vaccine. My belief is I'm not taking it because I think the Chinese are behind it.
Yeah.
I wonder if what you're... take is on this.
You know, remember the old talk, the people used to talk about the mark of the beast, you know. You'd have to have a mark to buy or sell or trade or whatever. Well, look, you've got people like Bill Gates seriously talking
If you don't have the vaccine, you cannot travel. You cannot go to work. You cannot go to a supermarket. You cannot buy or sell. You know, look, I'm not a medical doctor, but I do know that I believe in absolute freedom in medicine. There have been many therapies offered to, you know, fight this disease, and they've all been suppressed because the vaccine is the only thing on offer. They haven't even got a vaccine for the common cold yet, people. Right. You know, but they're going to force this on it because it's way more. The COVID is, look, the COVID was pushed by communist China. It's a weaponized thing. It's designed to destroy your president, destroy your military budget, and basically get you used to being slaves. That's really what it's all about. And I would resist the vaccine with every ounce of energy I have.
Hi, Trevor. Hello, long time no see.
How are you?
Just fine.
Right.
Do you have access to the president? And number two, the quote or the suggestions for the president that you just offered, do you have those in the form of a quote for your Twitter, on your website, something that we could spread like through social media and, you know, target his you know, account?
Now, look, I do know that people around the president have watched my movie and that kind of thing. I do know that people around the president read a lot of my articles in the Epoch Times and that sort of thing. I'm going to write that amnesty proposal up for an Epoch Times article very soon, and I would appreciate if people tweet it out and, you know, spread it on social media and that kind of thing. It just came to me a few days ago, really, but I'm going to do that. Look, I know a guy said to me the other day, he said, I used to work for Reagan, and I worked in the Trump administration. He said, meaning me, he said, your information is being used in places you couldn't begin to imagine. So I don't know what that means, but I know there are people around the president who are very aware now of the issues that I'm talking about. President Trump's got some great plans for dealing with China after the election. He's got great plans for dealing with the deep state and the radicals who are ruining your country right now. But we've got to give them the mandate to do it. Yeah. Plans are nothing if Joe Biden is the next president, people.
Right. Right here, Trevor?
No, with Joe Biden is... Look, he fell on... Look, I was saying 3 years ago Kamala Harris was going to be the candidate because she comes out of the same Maoist communist group that gave you Obama and Stacey Abrams in Georgia and Senator Cory Booker and Andrew Gillum in Florida. She was always going to be the candidate, and I bet a whole bunch of steak dinners on it, and I lost that bet, but now I'm going back to claim them because she really is the candidate. Joe could fall under a bus tomorrow and no one would notice, especially not Joe.
Excellent presentation. In 1963, the House Committee on Un-American Activities was actually the 45 goals of communism were read into the congressional record by a congressman from Florida. And one of those goals was to do away with the House Committee on Un-American Activities. And they finally got it done in 1975. And you pointed out who was responsible
for
that.
John Conyers,
Thank you. One thing that we could ask, this is something that I think we can all do, since we have all these wonderful Republican, conservative congressmen here, is to demand that that committee be revived, because that was what was exposing communism in our country.
Yeah. Look, I think that's absolutely something that has to be... Look, I want to add to that. Look, we got to understand, okay, if we lose the next election, we got some grief. We may never recover. But if we win, we can work towards things like reestablishing the Un-American Activities Committee. We can push to get America right out of the United Nations. We can do that.
Amen.
Okay? But here's this. We can also push to end the Department of Education so that you... And I got something cynical to say here. Well, sort of. Look, President Trump's done more to put you know, conservative judges into your circuits than any other president. And you've got a Supreme Court right now that for 60 years has oppressed Americans, taken their First Amendment, Second Amendment rights. They make a bad decision, they call it precedent, they pile another one on top, and now 60% of what the federal government does is completely unconstitutional. Well, now you have a 5-4 majority on the Supreme Court, okay? Now, I know Roberts is a flake, you don't have to tell me, okay? But he still votes our way more than he doesn't, and some good decisions have come down. But 4 more years of Trump, people, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is getting pretty old, okay? And her health is not great. And she has publicly said she would love to go and retire in New Zealand. Okay? Well, people, I'm willing to take one for the team. Okay? So you can go to New Zealand, play bingo all day long. You'll have a 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court, people. Think of the changes you could bring with that for your religious liberties, your Second Amendment rights, your education policy. They won't force a vaccine through if you've got a 6-3 majority, conservative majority on the Supreme Court, folks. Yes, absolutely, ma'am. Restore the Republic. That's the number one duty that we have in civics right now. Yeah, it's not a democracy. It is a constitutional republic, as you say, ma'am. Yes, young man.
Isn't the virus just the flu but with a different name?
Yeah, because the symptoms. Look, effectively it is, you know. They've just confessed, the CDC has confessed that only about 6% of the so-called COVID deaths were actually really from COVID with nothing else. That is way less than die in the average year of the flu. And do we shut down the economy over the flu? Did we even shut down the economy over typhoid or polio or chickenpox or smallpox? Far more serious diseases. So you're absolutely right. So they will look back on this period as a period of insanity. They will look back, you know, we laugh at the people who used to burn witches and things like that and, you know, let blood and whatever and all the crazy things people used to do. They'll look back on us and think, what a bunch of lunatics. You know, for what we did and what we allowed to happen. But it's been a very good lesson to all of us on how willingly many of our fellow citizens will give up their freedom with no questions.
Yeah, right.
You know, they just roll over against all science, against all logic, and the mass hysteria that takes over. That's the real lesson. That's the real public health danger, not the actual COVID disease.
Folks, I'm sorry. We just have time for one more question. Trevor will be, and I've got it right here. I'm so sorry. Trevor will be at the table, and he will be signing books. You are welcome to ask him anything you'd like to ask him immediately following. But we promise to have you out. When we do these things, we promise to be sensitive to your time. So we're going to have you out at 8 o'clock.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. But also thank you to everyone in here who's of the older generation and preserved our country for my generation.
Good.
Sir, each generation, the generation of World War II, of Vietnam, and even of the last one, had to fight communists and Marxists in their own way, and unfortunately, they had to resort to arms. How on earth does my generation avoid the same fate?
Yeah, well, that's right, and I don't want to see, look, you know, the first Civil War, some people say, I'm not going to worry about elections or the civic process, we're just going to go to Civil War and wipe these bad guys out. This is just insane talk. You know, the first Civil War in America was Christian gentlemen fighting Christian gentlemen. And that was still a horrific war. If we ever got into war in this country, people, that would be urban guerrilla warfare all over the country. It would be horrific. So we have to solve this peacefully. We still have elections.
Amen.
We still have the judicial process. So the churches are going to have to stand up and take the moral leadership to force the government to take the action against these people that they richly deserve. Look, for instance, When they rioted in Ferguson, Missouri, 6 years ago, they brought 10,000 people in from out of state to trash that city. That is a felony, folks. 5-year jail sentence for crossing state lines to commit a riot. You imagine if half of those people had been given 5 years back then. Do you think we'd be having what we're having now? So we just have to take the moral leadership and get out there and force the government to actually apply the laws that are already on our books against the criminal element that's trying to bring this country to its knees. And that will take moral courage. And look, moral courage is a difficult thing, folks. Because I know lots of guys who would pick up a rifle and charge up a hill against machine guns, no problem. But you get them to stand up at a town hall meeting and criticise the city council, and a lot of them, their knees turn to jelly. You know, we have to cultivate that moral courage. We believe what we believe, we will say what we believe, we will act how we believe, and we'll become leaders in our own community. And guess what? People will follow. So you're right, so I don't want to see you have to pick up a gun. My boy is 17. He'll be right in it. I do not want to see him march off to war or fight in a war in this country when it can be avoided if we stand up and actually make a moral stand. War is what happens when people haven't made a moral stand quick enough. That's what it is. And if we do get in there, you've got to get in and finish it and get out of it, you know? But look, absolutely, sir, look, I don't want you to have to fight a war. I want you to live in a free country. You've got a long time ahead of you. And the reason I do what I do is for my kids, you know? So please, I'm glad you're attending this church. I'm glad you're at this meeting because that's going to help to give you the courage you need to make the stands you need to make. So thank you.
Give Trevor a big round of applause.